I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. The U.S. Open has come back to the Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, and unfortunately so has the rain. It has been pouring outside, along with thunder and lightning. This is the fifth time the club has hosted the Open, where past players like Ben Hogan and Bobby Jones and Lee Trevino made golfing history. The course is small by today's standards, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have its unique challenges. Jack Nicklaus said that acre for acre, Marion may be the best test of golf in the world. The big names are here, including Tiger Woods and the defending champion, Webb Simpson. Joining us are two golfers and two golf writers, and they're with us here in our Philadelphia studio. Tom Coyne is a golf writer, assistant professor at St. Joseph's University, the author of several books, including Paper Tiger, An Obsessed Golfer's Quest to Play with the Pros, a course called Ireland, and a novel called A Gentleman's Game, which was adapted into a film which starred Gary Sinise. Tom Coyne, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Joe Logan. He has spent 35 years as a newspaper reporter and columnist, including 26 years at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He currently writes at his own website, myphillygolf.com, author of a book called Playing Around. He also writes for a number of magazines, including most recently for Lynx. And Joe Logan, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
So, rain delay. I know there was play at 6:45, but it has been pouring, Joe, for about the last hour or so. Are the golfers, you think, going just mad waiting for the weather to clear?
Yes, they are. You get so excited, so pumped up, so ready to play. The bell rings, and then, oops, time to stop. So you can imagine. They're frustrated. They're ready to go. And a lot of guys are just sitting around. Their tee times haven't come yet and won't come, and they get pushed back, and maybe they don't even get to play today. So they're all going batty.
So I'm assuming some of them, put on their iPods and they're listening to things to keep themselves, I guess, in character. Maybe others go pacing, Tom, various ways of dealing with rain delays.
Yeah, there's nothing really to do but wait. And it's not so bad to wait as a player. I mean, you have somewhere to go. The real thing, there's 25,000 people that showed up this morning. Maybe not all of them, but where are they right now in this rain and windstorm? You can't fit them all into the merchandise tent. So, with the rain, it's tough for the players, but the fans,
really hard,
where are they going to go?
Well, hopefully they're in their cars listening to Radio Times, and they can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Tom, what does rain do for a course like the one at Marion?
Well, it's been the big story this week because it's going to change. It could change the tournament quite a bit. The defense at Marion, everyone's talking about the length of the golf course. This is definitely shorter than your typical U.S. Open course. And the defense of the course would be the greens. And if the greens are very soft, which they will be now because of the rain, that lessens that defense. And the players are going to be able to hit it exactly where they want it. The ball is going to stay. And it's going to be a different tournament than the one we'd all kind of hope for and imagined, where you can see the balls rolling off and running off. And so it's really going to – the scores, they think, are going to be quite a bit lower. But at the same time, because of the mud, players are going to be dealing with mud on their ball on this weekend, because once the sun will come back out, people will think it's drier, but the ground will actually be mud underneath. So they'll pick up mud on the ball that won't come off as the ball rolls along. And that will impact, they call them mud balls, and
yes,
players don't like them, and that will impact the tournament.
How do you see it, Joe?
Exactly the same. They don't like mud balls because it is a piece of weight on the side of the ball. And when they hit the ball, they have no idea where it's going. It could come off left. It could come off right. It's anybody's guess. And, nothing drives a golfer of that caliber battier than having no idea where the ball's going.
Are they allowed to pick up the ball and take the mud off it?
No, they're not. In some tournaments, especially on the PGA Tour, they have a rule when it gets bad enough called lift, clean, and place. Critics of that call it lift, clean, and cheat. But the U.S.
Meaning putting it in a different place?
Well, you get to pick it up, clean the mud off of it, and then place it back in a nice place. A better lie. But this particular week, the U.S. Open, which is run by the United States Golf Association rather than the PGA Tour, they would rather have their fingernails pulled out than to ever resort to lift, clean, and place. I mean, I just can't imagine how dramatic or drastic it would have to get before they would do that. They say, we don't do that. I can't remember in all the years the USGA ever doing that, and so I doubt they'll do it this week.
And they don't do it because this is life on the golf course? You get mud on your ball?
Yeah, I mean, they're all about playing the ball as it lies where you hit it there. If you hit it there, you know, that's your problem to deal with. And it's also called the rub of the green, meaning you're stuck with the luck. You get good breaks, you get bad breaks, and that's golf.
Yeah,
what do you think?
They're not going to. No one's going to pick up the ball this week. You know, putting your hand on the ball, it goes against what the USGA stands for when the ball's in play, you know, touching it. And it was interesting in the press conferences this week. You could kind of hear some of the players campaigning for Live Clean in Place, saying that, you know, if there are mud balls, you know, the tournament might not distinguish the best player, but it might actually distinguish the player who got the most luck in terms of the fewest mud balls. But there's no way they're going to be able to touch their ball.
No sympathy from the organizers when it comes to this. But is it, I mean, can a little speck of mud on a golf ball make a difference?
It really can. At this level, it really can. Like Joe said, a little bit of weight on the side of the ball will. I mean, some players hit it hard enough and have enough spin where they can actually judge, you know, how far the mud could move the ball. But someone, so it's the physics of the game. Some of the guys who don't spin the ball as much, it'll come out more like a knuckleball, and they won't be able to tell which way the mud is going to move it. And in the U.S. Open, a matter of 5 yards is the difference between par birdie or bogey or double bogey, considering because the rough of Marion is going to be awesome because of the rain. It's going to be something to see.
Awesome. And
in terms of intimidating.
As a non-golfer, what does that mean, awesome?
It's going to be thick. It's going to be 5 inches plus. They cut it last night because they might not be able to cut it again for a couple days because the ground's going to be so soft. So you're going to see, if you're in the rough, it's going to be a great challenge. But if fairways and greens, these guys could really put up some good scores.
The superintendent, Matt Schaefer at Marion, who's one of the great, great superintendents at any golf course anywhere. I was out there talking to him not long ago, and he takes great pride in the rough. He thinks it's the most punishing rough anywhere. And he told me, hitting a ball out of our rough is going to be like hitting a ball out of a box of rope.
A box of rope.
He smiled. This fiendish grin, you know, when he said that.
Help us understand this course. I want to put this to both of you, but I start with you, Joe. What is unique about this course at Marion?
First of all, it's history. It's 101 years old. It was great. It was iconic from the get-go. Two of the most significant historic events in the game of American golf occurred in Philadelphia at Marion. The first was Bobby Jones winning the U.S. Amateur there to close out the Grand Slam in 1930. That's never been done before or since. It's arguably the greatest single achievement in golf, and it's something Tiger almost did. He had three in 1 year, but he's never done it, and probably never will do it. And the other was 1950, the U.S. Open, won by Ben Hogan. That iconic photo of him hitting that one iron at the 18th fairway. And the significance of that was he was, you know, the greatest golfer of his day, but he was only 16 or 17 months out from this horrific car crash he'd had, a head-on collision with a bus down in some dark road in Texas. And he was hobbling. It was, you know, a question as to whether he'd be able to play. And the fact that he played and won, it just stands as one of the great achievements in golf.
Yeah, the history is just unparalleled. And it's also, for me, what Marion represents as a golf course in terms of, you know, coming back and playing an Open at a course from this golden era of golf design in Philadelphia. And there's the Philadelphia School of Golf Designers, Hugh Wilson being one of them. And these guys were tremendously important to golf in America. And this is sort of the gem of all these courses that came out of this era of design. And what's so great about the courses is they were designed before you could really move a lot of earth around. You know, before you had bulldozers and you could just say, we'll put a hill here, we'll put a pond there, you know, that kind of thing. And you just had to lay out a golf course with what nature gave you. So playing a golf course like Marion, you know, when you're on 16 and hitting that second shot, you just look at it and you say, you could never imagine that. You couldn't design it. You know, it's designed by nature. It's designed by the, you know, what the designers had to work with, what they were given by God, I guess. So it's just so cool to play a course like that and to see the USGA committed to coming back to courses like that with that kind of history, with that kind of age, even though it's logistically a nightmare. It's awesome. And they're just so fun to play. I mean, playing Marion is just, it's such a joy.
And I would think also, my understanding is that, I mean, you've got houses nearby, you've got Haverford College nearby, you've got the sounds of traffic and SEPTA trains going by as well, Joe.
It is. That's a large part of why the Open never came back for 32 years is because not only had the modern game, the conventional wisdom was the modern game had sort of passed it by because it's a shorter course. Today's modern Open courses are 7,400 yards. This is stretched to its absolute length is 6,996. But the other problem was that the footprint, it's stuffed down into a residential neighborhood with only 126 acres, and that includes the clubhouse and the parking lot. And today's U.S. Open has become a modern sporting spectacle with all kinds of corporate hospitality tents. That's where the revenue comes from. And there simply wasn't the room for that sort of thing. And so they couldn't. And they finally solved that problem by moving much of that stuff off the property, the corporate tents to Haverford College's athletic fields. The one thing that's almost I've never seen unthinkable is the range, the driving range where the players are practicing is not only East Course. That's where the media center and the merchandise tent is. It's on the West Course, a mile away. The players shake their heads because they literally have to catch a shuttle bus from the driving range, you know, to the East Course, and they're all scared to death about missing a tee time, because in golf, if you miss your tee time, it's on you. You're toast.
Well, I wanted to, Tom, and again, this is just me doing my homework on golf, a sport I don't play and don't necessarily understand in many ways, is that a lot of today's really high-profile players are bombers. I mean, these are people that can hit a golf ball really, really far. But that doesn't necessarily work at Marion, right?
It's interesting at Marion because, like Joe said about the length, I'm thinking maybe there are two holes where guys will be hitting driver this week. And so it's not about length and bombing it. It's about thinking your way around the golf course, putting the ball in the right positions. Because, again, it's all about the greens at Marion. And if you don't put your tee shot in the right spot to get to the right spot on the green, you could look at the tee shots and say, oh, they're only hitting three irons, who cares? But it's important to be on the right side of the fairway to get to the right spot on the green. And if you don't, if you're just off the green in some of these holes, you are, like you said, you're toast. Bombing, not important this week. Which is why people are pretty excited about Tiger's chances, taking driver out of his hands. I think
improves
he could
his
do
chances.
Some, absolutely,
you think so, Joe?
Yeah, I do. A golf course, Marion. You know, they're bombers courses. That's what they tend to play nowadays. Marion is a finesse course. It's about shot making and spinning balls. Think of English on your tennis. You're a tennis player.
Yep.
Putting English. Golfers do that. Or they used to do that. Today's young players, you know, at a course like Marion, they're used to just blowing their tee shots over the hazards, over the bunkers, over the trees, beyond the trouble, right up to the front of the green. Marion was always known as, like in billiards, you're playing the angles. And that goes...
You can finish your sentence, Joe.
That goes back to the rough. That's the other... What they're doing is protecting against the errant shot by growing the rough so long.
That's Joe Logan, who joins us along with Tom Coyne. We're talking about the U.S. Open allegedly opening today at Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, just outside of Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Lantern Theater Company presents Tom Stoppard's Heroes, extended through Sunday, June 16th. War heroes Gustave, Philippe, and Henri are plotting an escape. They've had enough of the tortures of their confinement, dictatorial captors, untrustworthy fellow prisoners, and far too many birthday parties. Indeed, life in a retired soldier's home is almost unbearable. Veteran actors Peter Delorier, Dan Kern, and Mal White star in Stoppard's playful and heartbreakingly funny comedy. Details online at lanterntheater.org.
Coming to WHYY's Hamilton Public Media Commons, our popular Young Journalist Summer Camp for students in grades 9 through 12. Learn from the staff of WHYY's renowned news department, create video news stories, and work with the media instructors of the award-winning Hamilton Commons. Learn all aspects of production, interviewing, shooting and editing video, and more. Two-week sessions start June 24th and August 5th. RSVP at whyy.org/camps.
When Conchabuica started singing back in school in Mallorca, her music teacher told her she sounded like a dog. But instead of being discouraged, she went with it.
I really do feel that my voice is very animal.
We'll hear about the sound and style that's completely her own and her new album. Spanish sensation Buica is with us next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
You're my joy, you're my
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Today is the first day of the U.S. Open, one of professional golf's four Grand Slam tournaments. And for the first time since 1981, it's being held at the historic Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Things were delayed this morning because it literally was raining cats and dogs with thunder, lightning, and wind. Talking with two golfers and two golf writers, Tom Coyne and Joe Logan. And we're taking phone calls, especially if you are sitting in your car waiting for the U.S. Open to open. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're going to talk about, we have been talking about the course. We do want to talk about some of the players and just some of the joys of playing golf as well and the frustrations that seem to come along with the sport also. 1-888-477-9499. Of course, Tom, there's a lot of focus on Tiger Woods, you know, who has, what, about 5 years without winning a significant tournament? Do I have
winning
that
a
right?
When's his last major?
2008, yeah, U.S. So. Open at Torrey Pines.
Okay, so it's been about 5 years since a big win, I guess, for him.
Yeah, no, and I think if you're he is the favorite, and the
is
odds
he,
makers.
Is he the favorite because he's Tiger Woods, or do you think that he's
he'll always be the favorite because he's Tiger Woods, and odds makers make the odds in a way that where they know most people are going to put, you know, their money. So so Tiger Woods always gets the favorite for that. But I think he has to be the favorite this week, considering, like we said, not needing to hit driver, being able to. He gets a lot of people get excited about how far he hits the ball. Not so much these days. There are people who hit it further than him. But really, Tiger's golf imagination is unparalleled, I think. I mean, he really, around greens, the shots that he's able to pull off, the shots that he's going to need to pull off, getting up and down, and he just, that part of his game is just amazing. And if his irons are dialed in, which, you know, I saw him play a little bit. It's funny when you go look at the players' practice. You think they're all going to win it, you know,
like, because they all look so good.
But yeah, he looked good this week. So his preparation is always great. It's been extraordinary this week. He's been here for a while. I have the impression that he really thinks this, and he thinks he can win every tournament. But I think he's really zoned and dialed in on this one.
You're nodding your head, Joe.
The mere fact that he shows up is half the battle. I used to love to you know, at tournaments, go on the range and watch Tiger arrive on the range, especially during his heyday. Tiger always goes to the far end of the range because that enables him to walk past everybody. And when he was at his very peak, the other guys would avert their eyes. It's like, we are not worthy of making eye contact with Tiger. They would look away, and he would strut past. Like, yes, I am the sheriff. I am here. And he would walk down to the end of the range and start hitting balls. And literally, the ball makes a different sound coming off his club. And so you just see guys, they melt like, okay, what am I supposed to do? What kind of chance do I have? Now, that's
still
not
true
quite
today?
Not so much. Still to a certain degree, but not like it was then. But he's still Tiger Woods. In fact, what was it during the Memorial Day, I think the other day, when he had a really bad shot, somebody, a fan in the crowd, yelled out to him, hey, Tiger, that's all right, because when you wake up tomorrow, you'll still be Tiger Woods.
Wow. But is that confidence? Is he just a supremely confident player?
Yes. In a word, yes.
And Tom, you talked about his imagination. It was an interesting use of words, sort of his ability to imagine
the lay
of a course, or sort of how the ball is going to,
you know,
navigate.
When he came onto the scene, everyone was excited about his power game. But it's really the way he golfs his ball, if you will, the way he can get his ball around a golf course. In the last couple of years, you know, his ball striking, it hasn't been what it was at his peak, but he's already won, what, four times this year? Maybe not always having his A game, if you will, because he just can get around a golf course, and that's what you have to do in a U.S. Open. And you know, they've all got all the shots, but he's got all the shots. He's done them under pressure before, and this is an environment where he thrives, and I think that he will.
How about Webb Simpson, the defending champion, Joe?
Well,
how does he look?
If he defends this week, he'd be the first person to do so since, I believe, Curtis Strange in about, what was it,
89,
something like that.
So it's hard to win two in a row?
Not impossible, but very, very unlikely. He loves the course. He said that during Media Day when he was here on TV for the press conference, that he came here first for the 2005 U.S. Open, fell in love with the course, that it's one of his favorite courses. For all the reasons we're talking about, you know, this golf course has such unique holes. I mean, each hole is just special. There are no bad holes. They're all fun holes. But you know, there are any number of people. When you talk about who would the favorite be, rather than pick one person, I would say look this week for a ball striker, for someone who is creative like Tiger. What a course like this and what the rain does is make it so that the bombers don't have the advantage. You open the door to guys who don't hit it as far, who are creative shot makers and thinkers. It really, really could be a thinker this week, a smart golfer.
Absolutely. I'm kind of, I mean, if, you know, people ask you, it's a fool's errand to try and handicap that.
Of course. And I'm pushing you. I know.
And people ask me. And it's funny with the U.S. Open because the field is so large and because there are qualifiers that you don't, they're amazing golfers, but you wouldn't know who they were. There'll be names on the leaderboard that nobody would have picked. But in terms of who's going to rise to the top, I don't know. I got some feeling about Luke Donald this week just because of his ball striking, his iron play, and the fact that he's due. And I mean, I think that he'll definitely be around the top 10 in the end if he has that whatever it takes to break through and finally win a major. We'll see. But I don't know. I just woke up with Luke Donald in my head one day and I said, all right.
he's your guy. Yeah. You're going to go with him.
Yeah. It's a good one to have in your head.
Yeah.
In golf, there's a list of what we call best players never to win a major. Because when you win a major in golf, it really steps your career up to the next level. And when you're Tiger, you've won a bunch. But there are a whole bunch of guys, just like Luke Donald, who is exactly the kind of player I described a moment ago, the ball striker, the thinker, who's never quite won a major. He would love to win this week. And he's certainly a strong candidate to do so. You know, I'd put a quid on him.
Yeah.
He's an Englishman. So someone like a Luke Donald would be a great choice to win this week.
It seems, and we were talking about this before going on the air, about the kind of mental toughness. Even probably players like you, I know from golfers that I know.
We're mentally tough. It's both of us.
But just the golfers that I know seem to be hunted, perhaps even for a lifetime, about a shot they either got or missed. But there's something that maybe it's something about the golfer mentality.
My favorite story about just what you're talking about, years and years ago, there was a golfer named Doug Sanders who was about to win the British Open, and he missed on the final hole, this short little two-footer, lipped out, put him in a playoff, and he lost the playoff. Like cut to 25, 30 years later at the 2005 U.S. Open at St. Andrews. I was there for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I'm standing there, and I look up, and right next to me is Doug Sanders. And I said to him, do you ever think about that putt? And he said, no, I don't. And then he proceeded to talk to me for about 45 minutes about that putt.
Yes, exactly. That says it all.
Exactly. So it haunts people.
Yeah,
it does. Indeed. And that's Joe Logan. He has spent many years as a newspaper reporter and columnist, and many of those years at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He currently writes at his website, myphillygolf.com, wrote a book called Playing Around. Also with us, Tom Coyne. He's a golf writer, assistant professor at St. Joseph's University, the author of three books, including Paper Tiger, An Obsessed Golfer's Quest to Play with the Pros, A Course Called Ireland, and a novel, A Gentleman's Game. And we have callers coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Yes, I've been doing the show for 26 years and I'm having a hard time talking. Let me get Sue from Bucks County to join us. Hi, Sue. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
And I am one of those people sitting in my car in the pouring rain.
Oh, excellent.
I just wanted to tell a short story. 32 years ago, my father-in-law, who unfortunately is no longer with us, took my husband and our son, who was 7 years old at the time, to the U.S. Open in Marion. And it created a lifelong love of golf for him, even at seven. Well, this weekend, my husband, who is now the grandfather, is taking our son and our seven-year-old grandson to the U.S. Open. We're hoping that he's as excited as our son was when he was 7 years old attending it.
Oh, that's great. So, and are you all sitting in the car together?
No, just me. Just me.
Well, I mean, let me put your thanks for calling in, Sue. And let me just put this to Tom. Just the sort of power of this.
The USGA
tradition.
Would be happy to hear that. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things people have been talking about this week is that golf among youth is on a downward trend, which, you know, in the world that we live in today, given all the options for kids for what they can do with their spare time, you know, that does make sense. Golf takes a long time. Our culture is speeding up. So how we grow the game among young people is a big topic and something that the USGA mm-hmm. is very aware of and interested in. And so that an event like this, I mean, that's why they bring opens to they bring them to the Northeast. They bring them to Chicago. They bring them to the West Coast. They bring them to where they can reach the most people, because this is their banner to wave mm-hmm. and say, come love golf. And I can't imagine that any person, young person, that came and saw Marion and saw what was going on this week wouldn't fall in love with this game. It's tremendously charismatic what's going on out there.
Well, and I would assume, Joe, most people are going to be watching it on TV, whether it's, you know, good weather or bad weather, just because it's a small course and yes. What, 35,000 people max?
25,000, yes. So most people will see it on TV. And I must say, you know, tip of the hat to the Golf Channel. They've been doing some great, beautiful stuff the last few days. Terrific views of the course. A young friend of mine who I got practice round tickets for was out there, and I urged him to walk the holes on his last day. Walk all the holes around the course so that when you're watching this thing on TV this week, you can say, hey, I saw that hole. I saw that shot. I know what they're doing. You know, it's the greatest way to experience the game, especially nowadays, high definition TV, 50-inch oh, yeah. TVs. You know, it's a great, great game. Golf benefits from HD TV more than any sport I know.
Oh, that's interesting. Sue, thanks for the call. Let's see what Patrick from Winmore has to say. Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I was wondering, over the past few years, we've seen older champions like Fred Couples thriving at the Masters or Tom Watson at the British Open. And on this shorter course that is maybe not going to favor the bold as much as the clever, is this a situation where a name from the past could rise to the top?
Patrick, is there a certain name you have in mind or you're rooting for?
I wouldn't say there's, you know, anyone, but the older I get, the more I seem to root for the old guys.
I gotcha. I'm with you 100%. What do you think, Joe?
Well, neither of those guys are in the field. They're both great players. What Tom Watson did at the British Open a couple, 3 years ago was a singular achievement. If he had actually finished in that last hole and made that'd be something that would rank up there with Secretariat. Fred Couples defies age. You know, I remember, and he's such a cool guy. I remember years ago reading in a magazine that all the women want to be with Fred Couples and all the men want to be Fred Couples. He's just a cool, hip guy. And he's still at like 53 or 54, plays great golf. But to his point, I don't know. I think the oldest guy in the field is 44. And I would expect a veteran to win. I don't see a rookie or a first-timer winning, because the U.S. Open is so excruciating. Come Sunday afternoon, when you really got to perform, It's the guys who've been there. And it's oftentimes you'll see guys who have blown one major before, came close, didn't quite do it, and they've spent a lot of time thinking about why didn't I do it, and now they've figured it out. So a Luke Donald or mm-hmm. you know, there several guys fill that bill. Adam Scott just did it at the Masters. He had lost the British Open the year before, devastating loss, and came back and won the Masters.
Hmm. What do you think, Tom?
Maybe in terms of more veteran guys with experience. Again, there's not that many in the field, but I mean, I guess Steve Stricker might fit into that category. Well,
he doesn't play enough golf anymore.
Yeah, but I'd put him on the list of guys who might do something this week.
He's a great putter.
He's a great putter and definitely thinks his way around the golf course. So I'd put him in that list. I mean, no matter of age, I think fatigue is definitely going to be it's an issue in every golf tournament, but particularly this week, even though the course isn't that long, it plays long. You're up and down hills at Marion, and just it's like you're hiking a mountain and in an awesome way. So players will be tired, and especially coming off on and off the golf course because of the weather, stamina, will be a factor, as it is in every Open, but I think particularly this one.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Let's see what Hisham from Drexel Hill has to say. Hisham, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. I was just hi. Do you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to put an emphasis on the last stretch. And Marion, I got a couple of chances to play it, and I think that last stretch in Marion is going to produce a very, very special champion. It's going to bring a lot of drama. The putting has to be very, very good. You cannot be in the rough. It has to be a flawless 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 to win. I just wanted to see what the guests think about this.
Well, Hisham, I have to say they're both nodding quite vigorously. Do you want to take that first, Tom?
Yeah, I think I'm most excited about that closing stretch. As a spectator, as what we're going to see on TV, what's so interesting about it is that last stretch, Marion's kind of in two parts. One part's across the street in Ardmore Avenue, I think. Mm-hmm. And then these closing stretches back by the clubhouse. But the holes kind of wind around one another and circle each other. So typically in a major championship, the holes would just be kind of going out back towards the clubhouse. But the leaders are all going to be able to see each other. You know, you can look over, you'll see from 17, you'll be able to look at 18T, and they'll see if you're on 15. You know, it's really, if you're sitting, and it's going to be electric if you're in the middle of that. And that is going to be so cool. And they're just awesome golf holes. The second shot on 16, this par 4, I mean, every time I've played it, it just looks... You know, I'm looking at it this week. It looks, that's pretty generous. But when you've got a club in your hand, it looks like this little sliver of green up there on this, plateau that you're hitting for. Yeah. 17 is all day, that par 3. It's one of the coolest holes in golf. And then 18, they've moved it back so far. Right. Some guys can't reach some guys are having trouble getting to the fairway.
Yeah.
So
252 yards from the back, too.
Yeah, so that the finish is going to be awesome. And I know that's why the USGA wanted to come back to Marion to have that electricity.
30 seconds before break. You want to add to that, Joe?
Yes, that is Marion's final stretch of holes from 14 on in is widely regarded as one of, if not the greatest stretch of closing holes in major championship golf.
In the world? I mean...
Yes. Well, Marion is ranked in the top 10 courses. We have two top 10 courses in the world, in the country, here in Philadelphia, Pine Valley being number one, Marion being about number 7 or 6, depending on which list you look at. But they're both way up there.
Well, we are talking about the U.S. Open that opened at least briefly today at the Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. I don't hear the rain, thunder, or see flashes of lightning here, but there was a delay earlier today. Talking with two golf writers who happen to be golfers, Tom Coyne, Joe Logan, and we're taking phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
University Services supports WHYY. Are you struggling with depression? Do you have feelings of hopelessness, sadness, or a loss of interest in favorite activities? University Services is conducting a clinical medication trial for individuals between 18 and 65 who are experiencing symptoms of depression. Qualified participants may receive study-related care. More information is available at 866-534-9977 or uservices.com/depression. That's 866-534-9977.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Carl Hiaasen. His new novel, Bad Monkey, begins with a floating body part discovered in the bay by tourists fishing. The characters include a former detective demoted to roach patrol, inspecting restaurant kitchens, and a monkey who got fired from the set of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. From Iran, a preview of Friday's presidential election. Also, a son uncovers the stories of the men who fought alongside his father in World War II. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Let's go while we're young.
That's so funny. That's also Rodney Dangerfield's very famous line, while we're young, from the film Caddyshack. Well, apparently the USGA has taken that phrase for a promotional video or a set of promotional videos, saying let's move this game along. Let's not make this such a slow game. So here's one of those videos, Annika Sorensen parodying Rodney Dangerfield's famous line, while we're young, from the film Caddyshack. Let's listen to her.
You talking to me?
While we're young.
While we're young. Not you.
Annika knows the most important thing in golf...
While we're young!
...is practice. We're helping to pick up the pace. See what you can do at USGA.org.
While we're young.
So you both mentioned this earlier, and I'll toss this first to you, Tom Coyne, which is the idea of getting perhaps younger people to play and to... put a little more, what, action movement into the game of golf?
Yeah, I think that golf has three, you know, great challenges, main challenges. It takes too long, it costs too much, and it's too hard. Now, we can't do much about some of them, and there are ways to address some of them, but definitely the factor of how long a round of golf takes. I love that the USGA is doing this. The game is so much more fun, played at a good pace. Young players are picking up bad habits from watching, honestly, from watching the people we're going to watch this weekend. And yeah, if you're only going to hit the ball 68 times, take all the time you want. But you know, if you're going to hit it 102 times, let's pick it up, and that's fine. But like I said, I don't care. I'll play golf with anybody, and it's not about what you shoot. It's just about pace of play. You know, let's keep moving. And it's, you know, I don't have 6 hours. And I love the game as much as anyone, and I don't have 6 hours on a Saturday to play. And so I love this initiative to let's speed it up. The game is meant to be played quickly. The members play quickly at Marion. The members play quickly at St. Andrews. It's not a classic thing to take your time and be slow. Golf is meant to be played at a pace. And in Europe, they certainly do. And we've gotten in bad habits here. And it does come from, I think, watching the deliberate nature of the way professionals play.
Do you think it's more an etiquette thing? I mean, if you're playing and you've got people behind you.
No, it's a matter of people playing from the wrong tee. They want to play from too far back. They want to, you know, line up putts. The greens are cut too fast. There's another challenge that Tom mentioned, three very important ones. There's a fourth one I would add, and that is golf's challenge in finding its place in the modern American family. You know, when I was a kid, my father went to the golf course on Saturday morning. He worked hard. My mother did, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom. And he came home that afternoon having played golf. You don't see that so much anymore. Golf now it's aimed at the family. It's got to engage mom, the kids, dad. It's got to be something they can do as a family. And the very creative courses and course owners are beginning to make accommodations. They're having nine-hole rounds. I know there's a course out in the western suburbs, Honeybrook, owned and run by a very smart family, the Horvath family. And they have these family outings where you get nine holes, you get ice cream, you get a hot dog. Donna Horvath thinks outside the box. I hate that cliched thing, but people who are doing things like that are going to be the salvation of golf.
Is there also a danger, Tom, of just overthinking? I mean, spending too much time thinking about a particular shot?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Then you get sort of stuck in your head?
Yeah, the longest putt in golf is the 6 inches between your ears, right? There's no doubt that you'll play better if you play more quickly. And that's counterintuitive because people think, well, my pro told me to do this, and I got to line up this, and I've got to be ready, and I've got to do that. None of that is going to help you hit a better shot. So, yeah, it'll make you play better. You'll enjoy it more. You'll have more time to do things with the rest of your day. But, Joe, that's just that's a great point because I'm not a member at a golf club. And
You've also got a young daughter.
Exactly.
Who you're going to want to get to play golf.
So I can't – I look at places if I was going to become a member somewhere, and the first question my wife asks is, do they have a pool? And we were talking about it this week. No one's asked me to join Marion, if anyone's out there, and I'm open for invitations.
Just pick up a slip on the way out.
Yeah, I will. I didn't pick up the membership form. That's right.
And then go rob a bank?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's not about the money. No. It's the screening is much different.
Okay.
I said, well, they don't have a pool. And she said, well, I want to join somewhere else. So,
you're seeing clubs are beginning to address that. They know if they want to attract families, they've got to have programs and things like swimming teams and other sports that kids will play and the real key is the mother. You've got to get her engaged because oftentimes she controls the purse strings, she controls the kids, and you're seeing more and more clubs wooing the mother.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
And that's Joe Logan. He's a sports writer, spent many years as a reporter and columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He currently writes at his website, myphillygolf.com. Also with us, Tom Coyne. He's a golf writer, assistant professor at St. Joseph's University. Both of them are golfers. And we are talking about golfing and the U.S. Open that officially opened today at the Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, and certainly want to hear from the golfers in our audience. Let's see what Amanda from Philadelphia has to say. Amanda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I was calling because I wanted to see what your guys' opinion was on Phil Mickelson coming in so early this morning and then there being the rain delay. How do you think this is going to affect his game?
Are you a fan, Amanda?
I sure am.
Yeah. Well,
he's my favorite because he's my dad's favorite.
Oh, okay. Oh, there we go. Nice generational thing.
Yeah.
I'm tossing it first to you, Tom.
Aren't aware, Phil Mickelson, he got here, checked in earlier in the week, and then looked at the forecast and said, well, it's not going to be a great week for practice, and got back in his plane and flew back to, San Diego?
San Diego. Daughter's eighth grade graduation.
Yeah. Aww. So he went to the eighth grade graduation. I guess his daughter was was speaking to and some so but he didn't get back until I think 4 o'clock or wasn't meant to get back till 4 o'clock this morning. He was teeing off at 7. Which is not your typical U.S. Open preparation.
It's not.
So my wife, we were talking about it. She thought that was awesome.
I was gonna say it.
She loved it.
Yeah.
And she said, would you have done that? And
that's a loaded question.
Yeah, I was like, well, I've haven't won a U.S. Open before, so I'd probably be here getting ready for it,
But you also don't have a G5 with a bed in it to fly back on.
How do you know, Joe? I might. It's a tricky – I mean, I look at it from the point of view of a player as a professional golfer has a responsibility to his sponsors, to his profession, to his job, right. And that's – so that's kind of tricky. At the same time, he's got enough money. He's got enough trophies. He wants to go to his eighth grade graduation. Do whatever you want.
Sure.
You
know? What do you think?
I think it makes people's hearts melt when they hear that Phil Mickelson did that. And he said it wasn't that big a deal because he does this sort of a red-eye flight all the time. He does it to corporate outings where he's paid a fortune to show up and play golf for a day. So he said, this is nothing unusual for me. The only thing about it that surprised me is that Phil Mickelson has never won a U.S. Open. It's a huge deal. This is one of the two majors that has eluded him. He also hasn't won a British Open. He very, very much wants to win – a U.S. Open. He's come very close several times, most notably at Wingfoot in 2006, where he blew the final hole and said, "What an idiot I am," when he finished. Mm. So I was a little surprised, but family is very important to him, and he does have a G5 to fly back and forth on.
Amanda, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Talking about golf and the U.S. Open that opens today at the Marion Golf Club in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Tom, much has been made about these baskets that are at Marion instead of flags, and you wrote a piece about some of the history of the Marion Golf Club.
Yeah.
What's the story there?
The baskets, which are on top of the flag sticks, are unique in golf. Everywhere else you find flags on the flag sticks. The legend is that the designer Hugh Wilson traveled over to Scotland, was inspired by, he saw near the golf courses, he saw shepherds with baskets on their staves, and that's where they had their lunch, so that the sheep couldn't get to and that's where the inspiration came from. Marion, the historian at Marion will actually tell you that that probably wasn't the case, because there was a lot of writing about Marion when Marion opened. It was a big deal. And none of the writing or newspapers mentioned any baskets. And they would have, because it would have been very unique. So the credit for the basket actually should go to the first superintendent. So when they can document that they showed up, the first superintendent was William Flynn, which is also a very interesting piece of golf history, because William Flynn, part of this Philadelphia School of Designers, went on to design Shinnecock Hills, Cherry Hills.
Six or eight of the great golf courses in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He went from being a superintendent to one of the premier golf architects, and Philadelphia is a museum of the courses he designed. In fact, there's a Flynn Cup that the Flynn designed courses play against each other every year.
So there's a lot of interesting history behind that basket, whether it was Wilson or Flynn, and even the legend of Wilson. They said on that trip, he was booked to come back on that Titanic, but he was so inspired by the golf courses, he extended his trip. So the golf courses, it saved him from a trip on the Titanic, and that hasn't been documented either. But it's all good stories.
But it's interesting that the Marion Golf Club has a historian. I mean, perhaps that tells us something about this place.
And I've been in to see the archives they have there, and it's just really, really cool. Every club, should do that. And Philadelphia has so many clubs from this golden era, and Marion has done a great job preserving its history.
Right. And I guess in the archives are what's in there?
Stuff from the previous Opens, previous championships. Marion's had more USGA championships than any other golf course in America. Mm-hmm. So they have, things as, just bag tags or medals from these old tournaments, and just these great records of everything that's happened with these championships. It's very cool.
Marion alone has hosted more USGA championships than 26 states. Imagine that. One club. It used to be more than that, but I just noticed that the USGA has taken away two or three of their championships. It used to be that we were on number 19, but they got rid of the 1960 World Amateur, the Walker Cup, and I guess it was the Curtis Cup, because they weren't actual championships. They were USGA events, but not championships. Mm. So they now consider this the 16th. Still, that takes it down to 26 states.
Interesting. Let me get Cheryl from Coatesville to join us. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. I'm just so excited to talk to you guys. My question concerns how Philadelphia was chosen. What is the criteria? Is it because it's a long-standing tradition? Because I know there are lots of awesome golf courses across the United States. I was wondering why Philadelphia?
Want to take that? Well,
this is Joe Logan.
It's a shame we waited until now to talk about this, because it is one of the great, great stories of it, and that is that the USGA very much wanted to bring it back to one of these old classic golf courses, and there are no more old classic golf courses that better represent that than Marion, to prove that the game has not passed by these courses. And this particular course has such a legacy, such a history. They wanted to be able to show we can stage the U.S. Open still at one of these great golf courses. And it started, the two guys that should get by far the most credit are David Fay, who was the executive director of the USGA. At the time it was awarded in 2006, and Mike Davis, who is now the executive director. Mike was actually sent here by David in the earlier mid-2000s to tell Marion, you can't have an Open. You can do an amateur, a women's Open, but the U.S. Open has passed you by. Mm-hmm. And Mike Davis got here to deliver that message and decided, you know what? It's wrong. The conventional wisdom is wrong. Marion can host another Open. And he went back and sat down and told David Fay, we're all wrong. Hmm. And 6 years later, whatever it is, 8 years later, we're here.
And that's because he looked at it? I mean, he came here and he looked at it and he saw, I think he described it as a boutique.
A boutique, well, they are. Most Opens, nowadays modern Opens, have 40 to 45,000 spectators. This year they're limited to 25,000 a day. And so right off, you scrape 15,000 fans a day off the top, plus all those people on the way out the door of the merchandise center pausing to buy $100 worth of golf shirts and stuff. So they're taking a hit financially. But it was that important to them to bring it back here to demonstrate the modern game has not passed by these courses like Marion.
So what will you be doing? Go ahead, Tom.
No, and just Philadelphia needed an Open. You know, I mean, the USGA moves it around to where Chicago gets one, New York, D.C. area, you know, West Coast. And Philadelphia is, I think, the most significant golf city in America in terms of the history, in terms of the quality of the golf courses. There's no other city in the world that has top that in its Philadelphia section has two of the top 10. And that's just scratching the surface of the great golf in the area and the designers that made a mark here. So the Open needed to come back here. There would have been courses logistically where it would have been easier. Aronimink has more space. It would have been quite a bit easier to do it there. But Marion is where it's at.
Marion has such a history with the USGA that when they think of Philadelphia, they think Marion. I don't think there was ever a consideration of bringing the Open to any other golf course here except Marion. That's how big Marion, you know, looms in their consciousness.
Well, that seems like the perfect place to stop. And my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. A really fun, interesting conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Tom Coyne has been our guest along with Joe Logan. Joe has spent many, many years as a reporter columnist here in the Philadelphia area, many of those years at the Philadelphia Inquirer, where he wrote about golf. He currently writes at his website, myphillygolf.com, wrote a book called Playing Around, and he also writes as a freelance magazine writer as well. Tom Coyne is a golf writer, assistant professor at St. Joseph's University, author of Paper Tiger, an obsessed golfer's quest to play with the pros, a course called Ireland, and a novel, A Gentleman's Game, which was adapted into a film, and it starred Gary Sinise. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour. Thanks for those phone calls. Stay with us. We'll be right back.